It's time for the Ron and Brian podcast. Get ready to fill your ears with the latest news, politics, current events, and whatever else we feel like talking about this week. And now, your hosts, Ron and Brian.
And welcome for episode 155 of the Ron and Brian podcast. As we start year three, if you missed the third anniversary last week, well, obviously you can go back and catch it again. But here we are, Brian. Are you excited with the start of this season?
I felt that season two was our strongest to date.
Okay.
And I believe, and this is based on insider information, you and I have had a lot of conversations about things that we've got lined up for season three. I think this is going to be our best one.
All right. I agree. And I hope it's everything we want it to be. But let's start this season off and this episode off like we always do with Drink of the Week.
Drink of the Week.
Na zdrowie.
Salud.
Drink of the Week.
Drink of the week. Drink of the week.
And Brian, what is it you're drinking this week, sir? What? Ooh, you got it in a glass already. You're very fancy this week. What do you have? Talk to us.
You know me. I'm all about Jersey. I love New Jersey. I grew up there. Some of my closest friends are from the state. It's rich in its heritage, in its culture. Coming out of Ross Brewery, this is called the Navasink IPA. It's their flagship IPA. It's inspired by the river that runs alongside their hometown of Red Bank. It's brewed with 8 variety of hops, fermented with grapefruit, and double dry hop to perfection. The Navasink IPA presents notes of apricot, citrus, peach, and a mango for a tart, fresh, and juicy hop bomb.
And take a sip. Let us know how it is. Come on.
I kind of feel like 1 week you're going to show some level of appreciation for my enunciation of the description of my beers. And it never happens.
I keep wanting to make sure you strive to be higher and better. How is it? You look, you're contemplating. All right.
It's pretty good. For one thing that you should know about it, it's coming in at a 7.8.
Ooh, that is, that's a hefty beer. So it's going to be, an interesting Brian later on.
Ron?
Yes.
What are you drinking?
Well, this week, one of my favorite breweries, Dogfish Head Brewery out of Delaware. This is Costumes and Karaoke. This is an Imperial Cream Ale with turmeric, ginger, cinnamon, star anise, oats, and cardamom with vanilla bean added at the end. Brian, I see your 7.8%, and I raise you this 8% Dogfish Head Ale. Costumes and Karaoke. I've had this for a while, literally never tried it before. First sip, here we go.
Drum roll, please, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh boy.
Oh, it's a double sipper, ladies and gentlemen. A double sipper. This man does one sip and he lets it rest on over it, and he's coming in for a second one. Back to back, people.
That Ron, is good how is stuff. It? I'm happy. I'm a little upset I didn't put a second bottle in the fridge, but yes.
Walk me through the experience of drinking that. Is it similar to putting on a costume? Is it more similar to doing karaoke?
It's more similar to putting on a costume because it just envelops your body in warmth and happiness. You can really taste all the flavors in there. It's very complex. Well done beer. So I'm very happy with it.
Have we ever talked about your karaoke championships?
I don't have any championships, but I have done karaoke a time or two. Don't know if this is the time or the place though.
I know. Shut down.
I know what you're trying to do, Brian. I know exactly what you are trying to do. You are trying to keep me from moving on to This Week in Racism.
This week.
Racism.
Brian, I know you were, you hope every week that it'll be better and better. No, it is another full two pages of racism again this week.
Damn it.
Going to try and keep again a tight 10 minutes on racism. So let's get started, Brian. A white comedian has sparked outrage for racist jokes against an Asian American comedian who introduced him. Comedian Peng Dang had the job of introducing fellow comedian Toadie Hinchcliffe up onto the stage during a recent set in Austin, Texas. Hinchcliffe started his set by using a racial slur, calling Dang a, quote, filthy little fucking C-word, and mocked him by talking in a stereotypical accent. Since the video of his set went viral, Hinchcliffe has been dropped by his talent agency, WME Entertainment, and removed from the lineup of two live Joe Rogan shows this week. Caleb Kennedy, of the final five of this season of American Idol, announced his departure on Instagram Wednesday as a video circulated showing him sitting next to someone wearing what appears to be a Ku Klux Klan hood. Caleb apologized for the video while his mother defended him, saying they had just watched the movie The Strangers Pray at Night and were imitating the characters from the movie. Oklahoma became the latest state to pass legislation prohibiting K-12 schools from teaching critical race theory as Governor Kevin Stitt signed Bill 1775 into law. As a result, the Black Wall Street Times is calling for the governor to be removed from the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre Centennial Commission, which had opposed the legislation. The Oklahoma City School Board unanimously denounced the new law, saying that it only exists to protect white fragility. The LA Times published a report that entertainment agency ICM Partners allegedly maintained a, quote, hostile work environment where women and people of color were subjected to harassment, bullying, and other inappropriate conduct per a group of 30 current and former ICM employees. In 2019, the same agency also received backlash after Black assistants and other lower-level staffers claimed they were instructed to pose as agent trainees in a promotional video intended to make the agency appear more diverse than they truly are when it comes to the higher-ranking roles. A Black homeowner in Indianapolis has filed a discrimination complaint after an appraisal on her house increased by $100,000. Carlette Duffy wanted to get her house appraised last year, but thought something was up after she received two appraisals that were basically the same price she paid for the home in 2017. After listening to a speech about housing discrimination, she decided to conduct a test by removing all family photos, African artwork, and certain books, not disclosing her race to the appraisers, and having her white friend sit in on the third appraisal. After removing all traces of her Blackness, her appraisal magically doubled to over $100,000 more than she was initially offered. The discrimination complaint filed by Duffy and the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana asked the Department of Justice to investigate the discrepancies between the appraisals. In this week's Reason Why People Don't Trust the Police, an Oregon police officer is facing criminal misconduct charges after he drove home after another officer who was suspected of committing a crime instead of arresting him. Forest Grove police officer Bradley Schutz was indicted on one count of first-degree official misconduct stemming from an incident on Halloween last year when off-duty officer Stephen Teets drunkenly terrorized a Black family outside their home. In addition to driving Teets home, the family's attorney alleges that the investigating officers also failed to search him for weapons, intentionally omitted from their police reports that the incident was motivated by the Black Lives Matter flag on their front lawn, and they did not turn on their body cameras. Teets is facing charges of second-degree criminal mischief and second-degree disorderly conduct. Three New York City police officers were arrested Tuesday and charged in connection with an alleged tow truck bribery scheme. The investigation into the scheme showed that Officer Robert Smith repeatedly used the N-word and expressed his support for the Ku Klux Klan. Quote, bro, I point my gun out the window now at N-words and watch their reaction and drive away, Smith texted, according to prosecutors. And quote, now the real Smith will shine. I even shaved my head, Klan. Two Black women riding bikes in Central Park were falsely accused by a white woman of beating her. The incident began when Alana Lambert and Shakira Thomas dropped a phone charger, which the unnamed woman ran over and grabbed. When they attempted to get the charger back from the woman, she called 911 and accused the pair of touching and beating her for refusing to return the phone charger. At one point, Lambert can be heard in the video asking the woman if she is racist, to which the woman replied, "Yes, I am. I pick my race over any race. What's your problem?" The women eventually got their charger back, but NYPD officers decided that they did not have the grounds to file a police report against the woman. A high school baseball coach in Kansas has been placed on administrative leave after he was accused of telling the only black player on his team to turn his rap music down and referring to it as N-word music. NBC News reports that Dave Flood, who coaches high school basketball at Olathe North High School in Olathe, Kansas, was placed on leave Friday shortly after the allegations against him were posted on Facebook by the father of the black student athlete. The Olathe School District has released a statement confirming that the coach's alleged comments have been investigated and that the district has recommended that he be fired. A high school teacher in Alaska has been put on administrative leave over remarks that she made during a virtual class. The unidentified teacher from Lathrop High School, referred to as Ms. Gardner in a video of the class posted on YouTube, told her students that George Floyd would be alive if he had complied with police officers, that police do not have time to choose between their gun and a taser, and that students shouldn't dress like thugs with their pants around their knees if they don't want to be targeted by cops. The teacher will remain on leave until the school district completes an investigation. A coach at an Illinois high school has resigned from her position after a racist comment she allegedly made to a student resulted in so much outrage that someone called in a bomb threat. Sarah Baker, a coach and teacher at Marion High School, allegedly called a 15-year-old student athlete on the track team a, quote, barefooted African from the third world. Baker allegedly made the comment last month after seeing two black students running up a hill without shoes on. People began to protest at the school as news of the comments got out, and Baker was put on paid leave as a result. Then a person in New York made a call to the school threatening to blow it up if the teacher wasn't fired. Baker apologized to the student for the comments, but the girl's family said it was insincere. Baker was also under scrutiny from school officials for using Snapchat to, quote, professionally communicate with students. The school board accepted Baker's resignation on Wednesday, though they will allow her to be transferred to another school in the district. A woman was caught on police body camera footage verbally abusing an officer after she was pulled over during a routine traffic stop in San Dimas, California. She was pulled over for using a cell phone while driving, and after signing off on the traffic violation, she told the officer, quote, "Here you go, Mexican racist. You are always going to be Mexican. You will never be white. You know that, right?" The woman later called Internal Affairs to file a harassment complaint against the officer. The LA County Sheriff's Department stated that she has a history of making false claims against deputies. A man has been arrested after assaulting an Asian restaurant owner in Arlington, Virginia. Jordan Bevan consumed $70 worth of sushi rolls at Banzai Grill in Crystal City before taking off before paying. The owner and her son, Henry Kim, followed him out of the restaurant. And when Kim called 911, Bevan pushed his mother to the ground saying, "Get out of my face. You Asians have the coronavirus. I don't want it from you guys. Get away." Bevan has been charged with defrauding an innkeeper, felony assault and battery, and it has also been reported to the Virginia State Police as a possible hate crime. And finally, in the category of, I don't know how I feel about this, a Dunkin' Donuts employee in Tampa is charged with the death of a customer after he allegedly punched the man for using a racial slur, causing the customer to fall and hit his head. The customer, a 77-year-old man, was going through the drive-thru when he became upset due to a lack of service and was asked by staff members to leave. Instead, the man parked his car and went inside the restaurant to argue with 27-year-old store manager Corey Pujols. The man called Pujols a racial slur and repeated the phrase after Pujols challenged him to do so. That's when police said Pujols punched him in the jaw, knocking the man out and causing him to fall and hit his head on the floor. The man was transported to a local hospital where he died 2 days later. Police arrested Pujols and charged him with aggravated manslaughter of an elderly adult.
And so, hold on. Is there the elderly adult was the racist?
Yes.
Said something terrible. The guy punched him for being a racist, and the guy died.
Yes.
in your research, and I know you do exhaustive research here, does Mr. Pujols have a legal defense Kickstarter going on right now?
There are
actually, a GoFundMe?
There are a few different GoFundMes that have been started to help raise funds for his defense, as he is looking at potentially 30 years in jail should he be convicted on this manslaughter charge.
After this show, would you be comfortable sharing with me one of the links to those GoFundMes? Because I would like to send that man's lawyer a couple bucks.
I will hunt it down. I want to make sure there's a few on, but you always want to make sure it's the right one. So I think one of his cousins has set one up. So I will attempt to find that for you.
And you know, when someone's cousin is asking for money, it's absolutely legitimate. I mean, completely legitimate. Penny for penny is going to the cause that it's for.
Look at that. Right under 9 minutes, 22 seconds. Told you, Brian. Tight 10 minutes. In fact, I may rename it. It may change from This Week in Racism to a tight 10 minutes of racism. I haven't decided yet. We'll see. We'll discuss that. The show thing we should probably discuss. In the meantime, not much to discuss here. It's time for Beef of the Week.
And Brian's Beef of the Week.
All right. Brian, what's bugging you this week?
My meniscus.
Ooh.
The meniscus in my left knee has decided.
You were getting it something or other, vibrated or scanned earlier.
I'm back on the physical therapy, Ron.
All right.
I believe I have a small tear in my meniscus that I aggravated about 6 weeks ago. I did not seek physical therapy at the time because I am an idiot and believe that things just go away if you don't pay attention to them. And which you can check with both my ex-wives, and they will both agree that instead of confronting an issue head on, I have avoided them and made things a thousand times worse. Anywho,
anyway.
But last Friday, I was walking on a subway platform and made a quick pivot from left to right.
Okay.
And my left knee just baby deered. It started, and I almost went down, didn't, saved myself. And in the process, I've been in a massive amount of pain for the past week. Decided to break down earlier today, went to physical therapy, and the guy said, listen, I think if we do physical therapy and we do this properly, you should be able to avoid an MRI and possible surgery.
Well, I will keep my fingers crossed, and hopefully that'll be the case. I know, it stinks. You get to our age, and your body just doesn't respond the way that you want it to. I get it. Anything else? Is that the bulk of your beef?
That actually has put me in a foul mood all week.
That's fair.
Is that every step I have taken hurts. So it literally has made me in a bad mood at all times. So anybody who has communicated with me and has picked up on a lack of joy, left meniscus. Fuck it.
Take it easy.
Ron?
Yes.
What's bothering you?
My beef this week, Brian, is the narrative that people are attempting to push that people don't want to work anymore because of the added unemployment benefit, not the fact that there are industries that are just horrible employees and people get underpaid and whatnot. Like I was watching...
Preach on.
I was watching CNN this weekend, and they had, I think it was a restaurant owner / chef from Iowa or Idaho or some horrible place to live. And he was complaining. He said, well, I have to pay my bartenders $10 an hour now to get people to work. He's like, and if this keeps up, I may even need to offer them health benefits. He's like, I'm working 7 days a week. Like if you're a small business owner and if you're in the food industry, you're working 6 or 7 days a week, regardless of how many employees you are. But
how do you know that, Ron? Is that just something you've read?
It is between my Quiznos experience and, you know, just life lessons in general. You learn
seriously.
But listen,
you knew I was trying to make a Quiznos reference. So
But if an extra few hundred dollars a week is convincing people that they don't want to work for you, then maybe you were just a horrible employer to begin with. And it's good to see there is a ton of backlash going on out there for employers that are trying to really pump this narrative.
Well, it's a couple things. A, the $300 that has been added to the unemployment checks for many absolutely is a deterrent to low income employee in the workers in the low income workforce. It absolutely is a deterrent from them returning to low paid jobs.
Right.
At the same time, why is it considered okay in this society for a business to exist and be profitable on the basis that its employees are being paid a below standard wage?
Right. I mean, if people were paid living wages, it wouldn't be an issue.
And if you can't run a business because your employees, your labor is too expensive, then maybe that business shouldn't exist. Maybe you're not, maybe this thing is not worthy of existence. If right. The only way that you can stay in business is by paying a waitress $2.10 an hour, and then looking at your customer base to fund this woman's bank account.
Yeah. So yeah.
I don't know how, hold on. I don't know how the restaurant industry was able to get away with paying people below minimum wage. However that became legal is just beyond me.
Well, they have a very strong lobbying group is what it comes down to.
I didn't expect you to actually come with a legitimate, rational response. Kudos to you for shutting me down. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. So that's our beef. We got a bunch of stuff, Brian. What do you want? Do you want to get to news first? Do you want to get to a bit first? I know I'm excited about our horrible history. We can do that.
Or
we can
Ron,
put that off of it. Yes.
You decide. What are we going to do next?
You know what?
Where are you taking me?
Because this is something that you've come up with, I kind of want to ask the question, what would Ron do? So, Brian,
all right.
Give me your scenario for this week.
It was earlier this week. I believe it was Monday morning or Tuesday morning.
Okay.
My commute into work. Now, I know that, you know, loyal listeners of the show are well aware that I am no longer working from home. I am braving the New York City underground subway system to help me commute from my home to my office. One of the things that has been very interesting in New York this pandemic is the subway system, is the homeless problem that exists in New York City. The homeless problem has always existed in New York right. City, but we kept these people in shelters out of sight, out of mind, and we pretended there wasn't a homeless problem. So it was Monday or Tuesday morning. I am getting off the first train at 59th and Lexington. I am going down a flight of stairs, limping, mind you, because of my injured meniscus.
Meniscus, yep.
There is a slight walkway before I walk down another flight of stairs, which will take you to the second train that gets me from 59th Street downtown to the financial district where my office is.
Okay.
So I'm walking down the first flight of stairs, minding my own business, headphones in my ears, la-di-da, not a care in the world. I hit the landing. I'm walking down the walkway, at which point I see I'm going to say this man was probably in his mid-50s. He appeared to be Hispanic culturally, and he also appeared to be completely naked.
Okay.
A wild, crazed look on his face. The man is screaming something. I have my headphones on, music on, could not hear a word. I see a gentleman standing several feet away from him with a phone in his hand, and he's talking into the phone. The homeless man, I would like to mention to you, is also bleeding.
Ooh, okay.
From the stomach area.
Okay. You've painted a picture. All right.
What would Ron do?
In what way? I mean,
what would Ron do?
I would maybe stop for a moment and ask the person on the phone if they were calling for assistance for this man. And if they were, I probably would just go on my way. And if they weren't, I would probably, you know, call and report, you know, this individual naked, bleeding, in distress on the subway platform. That's me. You, okay. Brian, I'm guessing you walked by, not making eye contact, and moved down and got on your train and thought nothing more of it.
You're about 20% correct.
20%. Okay. Tell me the 80% I missed.
I stopped.
Okay.
Came to a full stop.
Wow.
Okay. Made eye contact.
Wow.
Stared at this man. He made eye contact with me. I then went to grab my phone from my jacket pocket because I was going to take a photo of him for my Instagram.
Okay. And you didn't.
Exactly. I sat there and said, you know what? I don't believe that this man's mental state needs to be paraded for social media clout. So I turned my head. I walked down the rest of the walkway. I walked down the flight of stairs, at which point I see the man's clothes.
So now you're starting to piece things together.
I see a polo shirt that was yellow, green, and white, and red for where the blood was. I saw droplets of blood near the shirt. I saw a pair of jeans. I saw two sneakers and two socks. And I regretted not taking the fucking picture.
Listen,
it ate away at me for like an hour that I didn't take the picture.
And I agree with Elisa here. You made some baby steps just then. You know, you allowed this man to maintain some of his dignity by not taking his photo and posting it on your Instagram.
I saw him naked. He is what I would refer to as, you know, someone that I can relate to. He was a grower, not a shower.
Okay.
There was no dignity at this point. There was nobody walking by him sitting there, you know, impressed with where this man was, how this man was approaching life. I wanted the photo.
Just so you know, good deeds do get rewarded. Lisa said she's going to buy you a dance for being an ethical person.
Really an ethical person? Am I trying? Did I just make one right decision? I'll take the dance. Don't get me wrong.
It was an effort. I'll give you that much. Did he have a mask on, Brian, is the bigger question.
Oh, no.
Then hopefully he was vaccinated. Now, as we were going to discuss, the CDC announced earlier that if you are now vaccinated, you do not need to wear a mask indoors. However, I think what will probably end up being confusing for people is that they still say that, you know, you have to adhere to whatever your state or local rules are. Plus, private businesses can still say you need to have a mask to come inside our business. So I think the issues that were had with mask wearing are probably just going to be amplified at this point, because I do think it is going to cause some confusion with people.
Oh, it's going to get worse. Plus, it's going to get much
worse. There's no real way to determine who's vaccinated and who isn't. So it's like now everybody can just be like, oh, I'm vaccinated.
But don't you think that this is the incentive for those who are vaccinated? Because if you think about it, the unvaccinated who have been wearing masks have been to a certain extent protected by the mask wearing.
Right.
I am fully vaccinated. Allegedly. I am not uncomfortable walking in public without a mask on because I know that I have a 99.9 0.02% protection from coronavirus. Frankly, as somebody who had coronavirus last year during March, when this virus was at its worst, I have natural antibodies. I'm not afraid of this virus. I know what this virus will bring to me, and I know I can defeat it again.
Especially now, that you have allegedly the vaccine pumping through your veins.
I'm not afraid to be in public without a mask on. The person who is unvaccinated and is going to walk around without a mask on, I say, fuck them and let them get sick. Let them get coronavirus. Let them die.
So you're saying this could cull the herd a little bit more for those people that are unvaccinated and don't want to wear masks. All right. Fair enough.
Let Darwinism do its job.
All right. Let's see what else do. Oh, that is very interesting. Bill Maher fully vaccinated and tested positive, so he will not be doing this week's show.
Okay. Okay. See, this is, and tell me if I'm wrong in this logic here. He's tested positive for it. Is he, how sick is he?
Right.
Is he symptomatic? Is he not symptomatic? The odds of the vaccine is not a 100% barrier from testing positive. But the reality of the situation is, the likelihood of becoming symptomatic are finite or infinite?
Both.
It becomes very small once you've been vaccinated. The odds of being hospitalized after you're fully vaccinated, the odds of dying from this thing after you've been fully vaccinated, even smaller, like that Hispanic man's penis. So small. So the idea is just the fact that, okay, so you test positive, but if you're asymptomatic and you're surrounding yourself with fully vaccinated people, what's the problem? The only people that you're there to protect, to worry about at that point are the unvaccinated. And at that point, fuck them. I'll cough on all their dirty asses.
Well,
actual dirty asses. I really...
At least it brings up a good point, just remembering still that kids can't get vaccinated. But again, I think
Hold on. What? She's wrong here, Ron. She says they're innocent. And if we all know, children are never born, they are born with original sin. With my deep religious upbringing, I can honestly say the children are all born with original sin and they need to be baptized.
Well, you know, they're
ordained. Born with original sin, thing Brian. Where they what?
Yeah, they're born with original sin, but you know what they're not born with? Receptors. So therefore, not having the receptors,
Ron,
they should be okay.
You're good.
Thank
you,
my friend. All right, what else do we got here? Can we get to? Because I worked so hard on this, and it's been such a long time since we've done this segment. Will you indulge me and let us do a little bit of our horrible history?
Sure.
With a new video intro, by the way.
And before you play it, can you tell our new listeners what our horrible history is?
I mean, so basically, we haven't done it in a while, but our horrible history basically looks back at times where we, as a country, were just basically horrible. Because people think we're horrible now. The fact of the matter is we have been horrible for many, many years, and we like to point that out. And so now we give you our horrible history.
Horrible. History.
All right. So this week in our horrible history, we're going to a town that is obviously very near and dear to me, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Before it was known as the city that threw snowballs at Santa Claus or D batteries at Santa Claus, one or the other, it was known as the city that bombed its own residents. And today, May 13th, is the 36th anniversary of the MOVE bombing in Philadelphia. If you are not familiar with MOVE, it was originally the Christian Movement for Life. It is a militant Black separatist group that advocated for nature laws and natural living. Founded back in 1972. The group combined revolutionary ideology, similar to that of the Black Panthers, with work for animal rights. They actually had an interaction with Philly police initially in 1978. There was a shootout between the Philly PD and MOVE at a property at Powelton Village that MOVE had been ordered to vacate. Officer James Ramp was killed by a shot to the back of the neck, with 16 other police officers and firefighters injured in the firefight. Eyewitnesses gave accounts suggesting that Ramp was killed by friendly fire, but 9 members of MOVE were convicted of third-degree murder and each sentenced to 100 years in prison. Fast forward now to 1981, MOVE relocated to a row house in the Cobbs Creek area of West Philadelphia. Apparently, neighbors complained to the city for years about trash around their building, confrontations with neighbors, and bullhorn announcements of political messages by MOVE members. So in 1985, the Philly police obtained arrest warrants charging 4 MOVE occupants with crimes including parole violations, contempt of court, illegal possession of firearms, and making terrorist threats. Police evacuated residents of the area from the neighborhood prior to their action, and residents were told that they'd be able to return to their homes after a 24-hour period. So on Monday, May 13th, 1985, nearly 500 police officers, along with city manager Leo Brooks, arrived in force and attempted to clear the building and execute the arrest warrants. Water and electricity were shut off in order to force MOVE members out of the house. Police Commissioner Gregor Sambor read a long speech addressed to MOVE members that started with, "Attention MOVE, this is America. You have to abide by the laws of the United States." When the MOVE members did not respond, the police decided to forcibly remove the 13 members from the house, which consisted of 8 adults and 5 children. So just to redo the math, 500 police officers, 8 adults, 5 children. There was an armed standoff with police who lobbed tear gas containers into the building. The MOVE members fired at them, and a gunfight with semi-automatic and automatic firearms ensued. Police used more than 10,000 rounds of ammunition before Commissioner Sambor ordered that the compound be bombed. From a Pennsylvania State Police helicopter, Philadelphia Police Department Lieutenant Frank Powell proceeded to drop 2 one-pound bombs made of FBI-supplied Tovex, a dynamite substitute, targeting a fortified bunker-like cubicle on the roof of the house. The ensuing fire killed 11 of the 13 people in the house, 6 adults, and all 5 children. The fire spread and eventually destroyed approximately 65 nearby houses. After the fire broke out, firefighters were held back and their high-powered water cannons were not turned on until 1.5 hours after the bomb was dropped. Mayor Good later testified at a 1996 trial that he had ordered the fire to be put out only after the bunker had burned, but the police commissioner said he received the order, but the fire commissioner did not. Ramona Africa, one of the 2 MOVE survivors from the house, said that police fired at those trying to escape from the burning building. In the aftermath of the bombing, Mayor Good appointed an investigative commission, which issued its report on March 6, 1986, denouncing the actions of the city government, stating that dropping a bomb on an occupied row house was unconscionable. Following the release of the report, Good made a formal apology, but no one from the city government was criminally charged in the attack. In 1996, a federal jury ordered the city to pay a $1.5 million civil suit judgment to survivor Ramona Africa and relatives of 2 people killed in the bombing. The jury had found that the city used excessive force and violated the members' constitutional protections against unreasonable search and seizure. In 2005, after a civil trial brought by residents seeking damages for having been displaced by the widespread destruction following the police bombing, a jury awarded them almost $13 million to be paid by the city of Philadelphia. And then, if that wasn't enough, in April 2021, it was reported that the remains of two of the children killed in the bombing went missing. After investigations into the bombing were complete, the city medical examiner's office gave the remains of Tree Africa, age 14, and Delisha Africa, age 12, to anthropologist Alan Mann, who worked at the University of Pennsylvania. When Mann transferred to Princeton University in 2001, he reportedly took the bones with him. After the news of the remains became public, UPenn, Princeton, and Mann released statements that they did not have possessions of the remains. In Mann's defense, he did say that he was unable to return the remains in the 80s because he was unable to identify them. He said he had asked members of MOVE to provide DNA samples to help with the identification, but they declined. And then this week, it was announced that Philadelphia Health Commissioner Dr. Thomas Farley had disclosed that several years ago, he learned of remains found by the medical examiner's office that belonged to victims of the 1985 MOVE bombing. Instead of fully identifying those remains and returning them to the family, he made a decision to cremate and dispose of them. Mayor Jim Kenney asked for Farley's resignation today and has also placed medical examiner Dr. Sam Gulino on administrative leave, pending a full investigation. And that, my friends, is the story of the MOVE bombing. You all right, Brian? You look a little...
It's offensive and depressing all at once.
It is,
yeah. I like the fact that you get the worst parts of the podcast to do.
I was saying to somebody earlier today, the putting together the This Week in Racism is probably the worst part of my week. But what can we talk about to maybe cheer us up a little bit, Brian?
I think I have a story that will cheer you up.
Oh, a story.
It is a follow-up.
Okay.
It is a follow-up on last week's, was it last week's What Would Ron Do? Or 2 weeks ago, What Would Ron Do? When I was talking about going to a baseball game and touching a baseball when being told by fans to give it to a kid.
That was a couple of weeks ago, yes. And you gave
and I it said it. I gave it to a kid. This past Friday, I went to Yankee Stadium to see a game between the Washington Nationals and the New York Yankees. And as I am wont to do, I showed up to the stadium when the gates opened up, so I could, with my friend who shall go nameless, I'm not here, I don't name names, I'm not a snitch. Anywho, so we got to the stadium when they opened, purchased a beer, walked over to the area right behind home plate, sat down, took in the beautiful vista that is Yankee Stadium, watched the Washington Nationals complete their batting practice, at which point, at the end, my friend, Ron.
Oh, is that an official Major League Baseball, Brian, that you got right?
Yes.
Now? Nice.
And not only that, but it is stamped. I don't know if you guys can make that out.
Yeah, practice ball.
It has been stamped practice. I got a baseball. I am now 43 years I've been going to baseball games and I have never walked away with a free baseball. I feel
this is karma, Brian, because you did the right thing and gave that child the baseball before. This is karma paying you back in the plus side, my friend.
Which means that because I didn't take the photo of the naked Hispanic man, I should receive photos of naked Hispanic women on my phone, right?
It would stand to reason, and I will see if I can facilitate that for you. I will get the wheels turning and see what we can do there.
Now, if you could find me a thick Latina
with two C's, I will work on that. So, what else going on this week? Liz Cheney voted out of her leadership role.
Republicans. Fuck them so much.
Because she doesn't want to support the big lie or Donald Trump. So she is, I guess, slightly less shitty than the rest of the GOP. So she is out, and that piece of trash from upstate New York, Elise Stefanik, looks like will be taking over as well.
What do we know about the piece of trash from upstate New York? Because I've never heard this woman's name, and now suddenly she's being considered for a leadership role in the House.
I mean, basically, you know, she was someone who was very outspoken against Donald Trump initially until he won the election. And then she basically kowtowed to him, voted
bootlicker
against in the election, it still pushes the big lie. A slightly more educated Marjorie Taylor Greene, if you will.
Okay.
Take away Jewish lasers from Marjorie Taylor Greene and you've got Elise Stefanik. In a nutshell.
What is her name again? Elisa?
Elise Stefanik. I'm probably getting it wrong because I just butcher names every week on this podcast. It's kind of what I do. So, yeah. But again.
Yeah, she looks like upstate New York garbage.
Liz Cheney, also horrible. But, you know, again, at least had somewhat.
But she had principle. She had
somewhat of a moral guy.
At least was able to say, I have my own opinion. I'm not afraid. I'm not going to be bullied. And you've got one of the two fucking parties that we have in this country that is literally a victim of bullying, and they put their heads up high as if they're taking some type of stance.
Yeah.
I saw earlier today 120 former members of the armed forces, like officer, like higher level schmucks, for lack of a better phrase, they all signed this document for like a Freedom for America, you know, whatever dipshit, talking about how the election was stolen. That shit was 6 months ago.
People are stupid, Brian.
Seven.
Definitely. People are stupid. And we again saw that this week with the gas shortage caused by the Russian cyber attack on the Colonial Pipeline that feeds, I think, from the Carolinas up to New England. Now we've seen a run on gas stations, people filling up gas cans, also filling up plastic
bags. Garbage bags. Garbage bags.
Containers.
What is fucking wrong with people?
But what's funny is there was a Hummer that filled up several gas cans in Homosassa, Florida, and then apparently caught fire and burned up. The driver refusing medical attention against everybody else's advice. His Hummer burned completely up. So the nice thing is, because of something like that, your insurance typically doesn't cover that. And then you have to pay for the city services that had to come out and, put the fire out on your car.
Oh, this person won't pay the bill. We know that.
But it's amazing because we say, like, don't go panic buy. Don't go panic buy. And then people just go fucking crazy. And
but
the
people went panic buying without even needing it. They literally were like, it literally was pipeline's going to be down for a couple days.
Right.
It'll be back up. It's already up and running again.
Yeah. So, I mean,
and you had people literally taking
it'll be fixed. Yeah.
But this is the problem. And this is my issue is that you've got people who have 3/4 of a tank of gasoline. They are going to run to fill that up so that they have a full tank for, God forbid, I do, I'm American and I deserve a full tank. And they don't need the full tank.
Right.
They can wait a couple days. But what they're doing is ensuring that quarter of a tank could go to somebody who's at almost empty right now and is going to be unable to use their car. It's the same people who won't get vaccinated, Ron.
It is. It's without a doubt. And the people that feel the vaccine isn't safe are putting gasoline in a Ziploc and tucking it in their back pocket.
Fucking idiots.
Brian, you know, we always try and do things to the best of our ability here. Sometimes we fall a little short. You mentioned that we have a correction to tell people about.
It wasn't a big correction, but something that was pointed out to me over the weekend after last week's episode. And, you know, I went back and I did some research. I know you think that I don't for the show. You think I just show up here at 7:45 and just wing it, which I don't. I do. I prep. But I did some research and something you said last week was not true.
Okay.
Last week you said that on September 10th, 2001, an email went out to all of the Jewish workers at the World Trade Center telling them not to show up for work the following day, which obviously the following day, September 11th, 2001, we know, tragic terrorist attack. Over 3,000 people perished in downtown New York City. What you said last week, that no Jews died on 9/11, it was incorrect. I would like to issue a correction to those that may have heard that and think that was true. That was not true. It is actually well documented that there were Jewish workers in the World Trade Center who did die on September 11th. I'm going to save the I will save the listeners right.
I don't recall saying that, but I sometimes black out during the podcast. So, I mean, it's very possible that could have happened. So I will take your word on it and I apologize.
Yeah.
And there it's corrected. Brian, it's time for your favorite song.
Stonks.
So basic, quick stonk update. Stock market brutal this past week. Stock manipulation all over the place. We are still feeling good about a lot of our stocks. We are still feeling good about LaborSmart and Next Level Hydrogen Water. In fact, they signed a joint distribution agreement with Manny Pacquiao to produce Next Level Hydrogen Water in the Philippines and distribute to all of Asia, which represents 39% of the world's non-alcoholic beverage market. So we still feel good about it. We still encourage you to take a look at LaborSmart under code LTNC and get in there. And as we posted earlier this week on our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, we are an affiliate with Next Level Hydrogen Water. You can find a link on there that will connect you to buy the water. They now also have these little energy drinks that they are rolling out later this month as well, which are available for purchase. And, maybe we get a little taste of it if you use the affiliate link from Ron and Brian Podcast and buy as well.
Question. Now, does that only work for the Next Level Water, or?
I don't believe so.
Is it also include the energy shot?
I believe it includes the energy shot, but you know what? I think if people would go and use the links and buy the energy shot, that's really the only way to determine if we're going to make money on it or not.
I really hope we can make some money on it. I'm tired of losing money. Like, I was up thousands of dollars like a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And now I'm barely broken even. I mean, you must still be up some money.
I'm up, but everything with everything else, I'm definitely down. Like, I have two stocks that are in the green, but I've got like 15 that are in the red.
It's been a rough couple weeks.
Yes, it is. It is definitely, definitely good. So two comments I think are very apropos. Brian's show prep, making sure all of the necessary glassware is ready. Very important. And Brian's show prep also goes to people who remind him to send the email for After Dark. Which I think you were a little bit better this week. But in case you don't remember, after this podcast, we do Ron and Brian After Dark at 9:30, which you can join if you are a member of our Patreon at the bronze level or higher. You can become a patron by visiting ronandbrianpodcast.com in the upper right-hand corner. Click the link. $10 or higher gets you live access to the After Dark. We also have a bunch of great swag that we'll send you as well. So it's just a good time. It's just fun. Brian, take that shot. I want to get your take on the situation going on in Gaza right now.
What's going on in Gaza?
Between Israel and the Palestinians. There appears to be a lot of violence taking place. And you said that you have your pulse, your finger on the pulse of everything going on there.
Right. I don't know anything about Israel. I'm very
okay.
All right. Okay. So what's going on in Israel is this. Jerusalem, the birthplace of Jesus.
I don't know that we need that much background. If you can maybe bring us up.
No. I'm waiting for you to tell me if I was right or wrong in that, because I'm not sure.
Well, sure. Birthplace of Jesus. Why not?
Jerusalem, the birthplace of Jesus. Also where
the Wailing Wall. No. I don't
know. No, there's something about Muhammad at Jerusalem. Okay, while I talk, you do a quick Google search about what is the Muslim tie to Jerusalem. Because I believe that is where Muhammad, who is kind of like the Jesus of the Muslims, ISIS, if I'm wrong here, please don't put a fatwa on me. I'm doing the best I can. I'm just not educated. So Jerusalem is pretty much considered high holy ground for the Jews because that is where their first temple was originally before they were invaded by the Romans and the temple was destroyed. But one wall of that temple stayed, and that is the Wailing Wall.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to go with you. I don't know.
Perfect. So did you look up Muhammad and Jerusalem?
It doesn't say anything. It says yes. It says Muhammad is believed to have been taken by the miraculous steed Barak to visit Jerusalem.
Barack Obama?
Where he prayed and then to visit heaven in a single night in the year 610.
So Jerusalem has this very strong tie to the Jewish faith as well as the Muslim faith. So it is highly contested because both religions want to be in control of Jerusalem so that they can properly practice their religion. The land was at one point under Jewish rule, then Romans, then the Ottomans, the Germans, I believe the Egyptians had it at one point, then the British, back to the Jews. Palestinians got kicked out. So the Palestinians have always said, we want back in Jerusalem. So they have a part of Jerusalem, but not all of it. Eastern Jerusalem is Palestinians, Western is Jews. And if we remember, Tel Aviv used to be the Israeli capital.
Sure.
But under President Trump, they moved the location of our consulate to Jerusalem to further cement the Jewish right to call that Jewish land. Anywho, over the past few weeks, Jewish settlers have started encroaching into Palestinian and Muslim-held Jerusalem, basically showing up to Muslim families and knocking on the door saying, hey, this your home is being taken over by a Jewish family. You've got 30 minutes to grab your stuff and GTFO. Otherwise, we are going to have a problem. Now, this is clearly awkward. So the Muslims started to push back. The Jews, backed by the Israeli Defense Forces, backed by a military that has American support monetarily, one of the strongest militaries in the world, they start getting involved. A scuffle breaks out, which leads to some protests, which leads to a little violence vis-a-vis, ergo. Now we got a full-fledged ground attack. Israeli troops have now invaded the Gaza Strip, which is over here compared to where Gaza is. I really wish somebody was correcting me because I really feel like that would add something to my presentation here.
I mean, I will say I don't know the lay of the land there. So, I mean, you could be directing the right direction or the wrong direction.
I think if we did a Pareto analysis, I'm 80% right.
All right.
Like I'm getting the major points correct.
Listen,
so the point is this, is the fact that one of the problems that has been going on over there, and it has been going on for a while, are Jewish settlers expanding outside of what was considered Jewish territory into what was considered Palestinian territories. And because the Jews have the sword and the Palestinians have the rock, it is an unfair fight. So I believe we've got the next fucking war going on right now. And all I can say is this. I don't have a dog in the fight. I don't have a rat in the race. I don't have a cat in
the house. But
I'm tired of war. I'm tired of seeing people suffer. And I cannot understand why, instead of looking for a compromise, we look to use weapons and death and pain. And it's a sad testament that the human race, that's where they tend to go. And it's sad to watch, because both sides, I think, are only adding to the misery of the other side and bringing more misery upon themselves. And it's so fucking sad to watch, because at the end of the day, nobody really wants there to be any progress, because you've got too many people profiting off of war,
right,
and profiting off of misery, and they want to keep it going. And nothing ever changes for the better.
First, kudos to you. Elisa says you're a man for taking the stand on this, and you've been upgraded to the champagne room. So that is exciting for you. I know you're a fan of the
champagne. I don't know. I can handle a champagne room.
Elisa also directed me to a video, Trevor Noah from The Daily Show, talking about the situation in Gaza. And you know, his point was, it's a very complicated situation. You know, there's bad on both sides. There's good on both sides. But he kind of touched on what you said there, as far as the military might of, you know, Israel versus Hamas. Like, Hamas fires all these missiles over into towards Israel, and their defense systems are so great that none of them get through. Like, they either get destroyed or they fall short. And you see that in the death count, which I think was up to about 65 of the Palestinians, about 15 or 16 of them children. And then you've got two people dead on, you know, on the Israeli side. And like, if you carry that out, if you had a war where you had like 6.5 million dead on one side and 200,000 on the other side, you'd be like, well, the side with 6.5 million dead is either really bad or really underarmed. And his point was, you know, yes, you are being provoked by Hamas, but because of your might, does it make sense to strike back in the way that you're capable of? Or does it make more sense to just defend yourself and, you know, have a bit of mercy with the civilians that are being caught up in this battle right now? And clearly Israel is like, we're just going to defend ourselves, and whoever dies, dies.
And call me cynical, but I believe that there is a very strong force amongst the powers that be, amongst the Palestinians. And Jesus, this is territory that will literally not only get me fired at work, but may also get me killed by an angry. But I genuinely do believe that there is a strategic decision amongst the power brokers of the Palestinians to ensure that it never is a fair fight, that they are able to garner public support because they're seen as the impoverished, because they're seen as the David versus the Goliath, and that if they were to ever elevate outside of the role of David, that they would lose the sympathy vote. So therefore, it is to the Palestinians' advantage for them to not be able to fight a fair fight, for them to launch a rinky-dink missile, knowing that it's going to get blown up in the air, and that the Israelis are going to, because the Israelis are very predictable, they will always jump at the opportunity to just fucking level the Palestinians in their homes, because it makes them feel good.
Right.
And if I was Israeli and I was, you know, surrounded by, angry Arabs, I would probably understand it. But it's a way to trap the Israelis into an unpopular position that causes them to have to scale back at a certain point. And let's be honest, the money flows into Palestine and it never reaches the actual life improvement of the person on the street. If you look at the amount of money that has been contributed to the Palestinian cause, you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars that for some reason never seems to actually improve the life quality in the Palestinian-held lands. They're well known for corruption. Oh my God, I'm literally talking myself into a stabbing. My God, what am I doing?
What's amazing to me is like everyone, especially politicians here in the U.S., they're so scared to say anything negative about Israel.
Of course. Oh my God.
But Israel, I mean, you can't even make a valid criticism of Israel without being branded an anti-Semite.
But Ron, we live in a world where you can't say that you don't think Donald Trump lost the election. You get kicked out of your own fucking party.
Oh, that's true.
Like you can't like we're like the people that we're supposed to look to as being leaders are so afraid of their weak hold on power that they're not willing to do anything that might jeopardize it.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. At one point you had 51% of this podcast and you gave it up simply because you were tired of being seen as this tyrant, as a podcast tyrant.
Well, speaking of horrible people clinging to hold on to power, Ellen DeGeneres making the news, saying that she will be leaving her talk show at the end of next season, her 25th season, at the end of the season in 2022. Really playing the victim card, making statements this week that she couldn't believe her employees felt that there was a toxic work environment because the celebrity guests always seem to be having such a good time. And then, you know, blaming the fact that she had, you know, 200 some employees spread out amongst many buildings. So, I mean, how is she a simple lesbian to track what goes on within her talk show, whether people are being abused and whatnot? How is she as the, if you will, Ellen DeGeneres of the Ellen DeGeneres show responsible for anything that goes on within the show that bears her own name?
Are we still talking about Ellen or are we talking about this podcast, Ron?
I have no idea.
Because, you know, Ron, I would like to take this opportunity to announce that this will be my last season with the Ron and Brian podcast. When you're a creative person, you constantly need to be challenged. And as great as this show is and as much fun as it has been, it's just not a challenge anymore to me.
I understand. And we appreciate your sacrifice. And we will be putting feelers out for a replacement.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Don't jump the gun. We have a whole year.
Okay. I will say this, though, as far as a replacement for Brian, we will give preferential treatment to anyone that is a Patreon subscriber. So if you are
interested, diamond level, they have to be a diamond level or higher.
If you want to fill Brian's seat, then consider going to Ron and Brian Podcast. .com, filling out the subscribe to Patreon. And again, you get access to After Dark, which starts at the bottom of the hour here. So it is a pretty good deal. Brian,
Ron, can I ask you a question?
Of course you can.
What are you watching?
What am I watching? Really, the only thing, I'm keeping up with the Handmaid's
Kardashians.
The Handmaid's Tale, keeping up with the new episodes as they release them. And I've also been watching this show, Cruel Summer, on Freeform, which I catch on Hulu as well. So basically, it is a show. It is set in three different years. So it's like there is some sort of incident that occurs where this teenager is kidnapped by the assistant principal of the school. And this girl becomes popular by kind of taking over her life. So you see the year before the incident happens, you see the year the incident happens, and you see the fallout of the year after. And so each episode takes a day in each of those 3 years and juxtaposes it again. Oh, look out. Elisa's got some stimulus money left over. She might make Athena, her daughter, a diamond level, and this will be the Ron and Athena podcast. I like that. But anyway, so yes, Cruel Summer we're watching. Brian,
I will do a silver level if it becomes the Ron and Athena show. I will watch that show every week.
There you go. Brian, what are you watching?
Oh, I watched something so you don't have to. On HBO Max, I watched That Damn Michael Che.
Now, how was it? I kind of want to
Michael
see
Che is a stand-up comedian from New York City. He is considered, I believe, right now the co-head writer of Saturday Night Live. He is the co-host of the Weekend Update segment.
Yep.
So it is a it's a sketch-based show. There are six episodes. They range from 20 to 25 minutes in length. I'm not sure that it really sent a cohesive message. They were I didn't laugh until episode 4, but when I laughed, I definitely laughed. It's their social commentary. It felt like a Chappelle show that was watered down significantly.
Without the edge.
And at the same time, everything doesn't have to be on the edge. Everything doesn't have to be all the way out there pushing boundaries or whatnot. There were parts that were absolutely dry where you sat there and said, I'm not sure what the purpose of it. It's very slow to kind of get its legs. I felt like for a show where like all six came out all at once, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
There, it would have felt like the episodes were more consistent, but episodes 1 through 3 were very slow. I sat there and said, listen, I got another hour. I'll knock out the rest of the show. That's when I felt like it picked up steam and became worthy of spending the period of time. I recommend it if you want to have a sense of the African-American experience in 2021. I think if you like the Saturday Night Live type of humor, slightly irreverent, I recommend it, but don't hold it against me if you give up 2 episodes in.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you for watching us. We are going to wrap things up here. We're going to get ready for After Dark starting at 9:30. Again, Patreon members, bronze level or higher, get to join us. So if you want to catch it real quick, you can go over to ronandbrianpodcast.com, click become a patron, join us, and we'll get you the link out real quick. Otherwise, we will be back next Thursday night here at 8 o'clock. Me, Brian's torn meniscus. We will all be in the house. Brian, anything else before we get on out of here? It's your meniscus. It looks pretty bad.
Fucking hurts.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us, and we will catch you all next week.
Thank you for joining us on the Ron and Brian podcast. We're live each week, Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. You can find prior episodes, links to our social media, and everything else Ron and Brian at ronandbrianpodcast.com. See you again next week.